Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
One of the things that I've tried to impress upon my oldest daughter especially, and my all three of my kids, is that you got to start saving for retirement early. Male, female, doesn't matter. You got to start doing that. In fact, we started a Roth IRA for my daughter when she was 15. She got her first job. We said, we're going to start up with this Roth IRA. We're going to take half of your earnings, going to throw it in there. And in 50, 60, 70 years, that, you know, couple thousand dollars we're going to put aside is going to be real money. That whole compound interest thing. Sadly, you think about this, and I go back to when I was a kid. I wish someone would have done that for me, because I didn't start really saving for retirement until my 30s. And thanks to my union, they started a little bit sooner. Retirement security is one of those things never too early to talk about, but especially for women, because what we're finding out is that, women are falling way behind, or have fallen way behind men. And I look at my wife, who stayed home to raise our children. I worry what happens when I go, and here to share some thoughts on how can we shore up retirement security for women from this day going forward. I've asked Maria Fries to come talk with us. She's a senior policy advisor with the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Their website, ncpss.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Maria, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you for inviting me. This is a subject that is near and dear to my heart, so I'm more than happy to come and talk about it anytime.
So how bad is it? How bad are women screwed in the retirement world?
Well, many people are aware of the gender gap in pay, that women these days are earning about 82 cents for every dollar earned by a man. But most people don't realize that there's also a gender gap in retirement. So if you have a man and a woman that are hitting 60, they've been working 40 years doing comparable jobs, the man decides, oh, I have enough money, I can retire. The woman has to work another 9 years, almost a decade, well past Social Security's retirement age, before she will have accumulated as much as the man did in terms of lifetime earnings. That's a big gap. Right. And it really does affect women's ability to retire.
Now, why is that? Is that childbearing years? Is that, is that gender inequality? What's the cause of that?
Well, the pay gap is gender inequality. There are other reasons on top of the pay gap that affect retirement gap. The pay gap is a purely calculated on comparable job pay. And I think the large portion of the reason for that is the fact that most employers are men. And so they don't value the jobs that are primarily done by women, even in the same businesses. For example, you work in a factory. If you're the office manager, you're just as important to that business being able to function as you are if you're the shop foreman. Shop foreman's usually a man. Office manager is usually a woman. Foreman's almost inevitably going to get paid more than the woman that's doing the office work. And if the office falls apart, it's just as damaging to the company as it is if the foreman can't get a product out. So when you have that kind of inequity built through the system, it just makes it harder and harder for women to get to retirement age and have enough accumulated.
When you talk about those things, I'm a big fan of transparency. As a union guy, I believe union contracts can solve a lot of these problems simply by making it transparent, writing it down on paper and justifying why it's on paper. So for me, that's the direction that I would go. Is there a way that you see outside of that we would go to change that situation? Or is it possible
to
change?
We'd love to get more women in managerial positions and in ownership positions. As you know, if you have a little bit of history, Lilly Ledbetter was a woman who went all the way to the Supreme Court to be able to get some of that transparency that you're talking about.
Yep.
Because in most workplaces, you're not allowed to talk about how much you're earning. And that's part of the reason that women don't know that they're being undervalued. If you can't talk with your coworkers that are doing the same jobs or comparable jobs and find out what they're getting paid, you may go through an entire working career and not know that you have been undervalued. And so the legislation that passed that strips away that protection was a good thing, but you still need to do more. And the Paycheck Fairness Act, which passed the House earlier this year, would have been a good next step. But of course, couldn't overcome the filibuster in the Senate, so it couldn't go anywhere.
Now, you brought up the Lilly Ledbetter Act, which I always get into trouble with my female listeners who get angry when I say that shouldn't have ever happened. We shouldn't have wasted the political capital on passing that piece of legislation. What we should have done is we should have passed comprehensive labor law reform so that Lilly Ledbetter didn't get cheated for those 40 years. We shouldn't have changed the law to go, oh, once she finds out she can go and sue. We should have changed it to go, hey, let's make sure Lilly never gets cheated.
I can't disagree with you on that, although as an organization, we're focused on Social Security and Medicare, and my expertise is not in labor law, but I certainly wouldn't argue with you about that point, because there are ways of creating solutions through the ability of people to negotiate for their contracts and negotiate power, get some power in the balance. So that they can actually do a better job.
And transparency. Work. Look, at the end of the day, if Lilly Ledbetter was a union member, if she had the ability to join and form a union, she would know what her coworkers were making. She would know what she's making. And right in the book, she'd find it out. And there wouldn't be 40 years of being cheated. But you did bring up Social Security because obviously that is your area of expertise. Is this a way that we could maybe, you know, change that balance and help women catch up a little bit by maybe adding a little bit to Social Security to kind of bump that up? Because Social Security is or was supposed to be an anti-poverty program. We want to make sure women stay out of poverty. Is this a way that maybe you can level that playing field a little?
Absolutely. And in fact, that's our focus. You can try to solve the problem a lot of different ways, one of which we have been talking about now, which is try to work on some of the pay disparities. Women also tend to end up in service jobs, which don't usually have any kind of pension or even access to a 401k plan necessarily. Women are more likely to be working part-time. And as you know, part-time workers have very limited access to retirement plans at work. Women are also more likely to take time out for caregiving. That's another problem. And so you have all these workplace issues that can get very controversial and very difficult to try to resolve. So we focus on as much as we can on the retirement end. And one of the ways of fixing that problem on the retirement end is expanding Social Security. Social Security already does some of that because the benefit is progressive, which means that you get more bang for your buck if you are a lower lifetime earner than you do if you're a high income. You're still going to get a bigger Social Security check if you earned more over a lifetime. But the way the formula works, you get more of a value for your dollar if you are lower lifetime earner. And that's the only program that works that way. That being said, we haven't had major Social Security reforms since the mid-1980s. And the workplace has changed since then. So we firmly believe that we should be doing expansions of Social Security. We should be doing programs, legislation to restore the value of a lot of those benefits. A number of proposals are out there, and some of them they're all gender neutral, but some tend to help women more than others. For example, fixing the cost of living adjustment. Social Security is the only retirement program we have with an automatic cost of living adjustment, but it's pegged on an inflation indicator that doesn't correspond with the kinds of things that older people buy. Older people tend to spend more of their money on healthcare, for example. And healthcare expenses grow faster usually than the rest of the economy. And so we're constantly falling further and further behind. Women who live longer than men get impacted by that more because the longer you live, the longer your inflation is undercalculated, the further and further behind you fall over time. So there are proposals to readjust how the COLAs are calculated. That would help everybody, but especially would help women because we live longer. There are provisions out there to try to help surviving spouses because, as we talked about earlier, women tend to outlive their husbands. We tend to be the surviving spouses. And these proposals would end up boosting benefits for the survivors. Just because there's only one of us doesn't mean that our expenses get cut in half. You still have to pay for housing. You still have to pay for electric. You still have to pay for your health care. There are a lot of expenses that we have that aren't necessarily cut in half when we lose a spouse, and yet our Social Security benefits are cut in half. And so there are proposals out there to try to improve that. their proposals to boost everybody's benefits, so nobody is below the poverty line in retirement, which is another positive impact. Right. So there are bills out there to try to make those changes.
But how do you do that? And look, I'm all in favor in increasing benefits and having a better leveling system. But how do you do that in a system that we're told is already losing money, that, you know, in a couple of years, we're going to potentially see some radical changes. We haven't done anything to scrap the cap or increase that top number very much. So we're concerned there isn't enough money going in. At the same time, where we're almost hitting the point of where, you know, like 40-45% of working people are now in these gig jobs that aren't contributing to Social Security, setting up an even bigger retirement problem down the road. How do we deal with that?
Well, the gig workers are supposed to be contributing to Social Security. They are self-employed. And in fact, gig workers are supposed to be contributing both the employee and the employer share of the Social Security FICA tax. Now,
keyword,
it's a lot hard. Yeah, it's supposed to. Yes, it's a lot harder to monitor that, obviously, than it is if you're getting a form from your employer who has to also report it to IRS. So it's a bigger challenge. But you're absolutely right. It's going to take some increased revenue into the system, because under current projections, no matter how exact the numbers are, at some point in the next decade or two, you're not going to have enough income coming in through the FICA tax as it's structured right now to be able to pay full benefits. There's still going to be money coming in, so you're still going to be able to pay benefits, but you won't be able to pay 100% of benefits. So one way or the other, we have to figure out a way to get more revenue into the system.
Right.
But you do it as part of a package that includes the benefit improvements, that includes the extension of solvency, and you figure out what the program should look like, and then you figure out how you're going to be able to pay for it. And we need to do both.
Yeah, because when my 19-year-old daughter, she's 19 now, and we sat down when she was 15 to fill out her Roth IRA forms and get her started in this, you know, she said at 15 that she believed that she was never going to see a Social Security check. They're starting that kind of rhetoric early. And I don't know if that's, you know, give the Social Security haters credit for being able to reach that far down, or if we just haven't done a good enough job to say, no, it's not going to go bankrupt. There's just going to be some changes, but we can alleviate that by making smart choices. But my daughter at a very young age said, no, that's not going to be there for me, which is why she was so into going, hey, how do I save for retirement now at 15 years old?
Well, that's absolutely right. And unfortunately for us, the other side has significantly more resources available to plant the misinformation than we do to try to correct it. And so it's been an ongoing problem of people scaremongering, particularly the young, that the program's not going to be there for them, and therefore undermining the support that the program has among Americans so that they can get rid of it and move everything over to Wall Street. So it's been an ongoing problem. On the side for your daughter, you have to remember, Social Security was never intended to be the sole source of people's retirement. There was always an expectation that you would have other income coming
right.
in retirement.
The three-legged stool.
A pension, for example, a traditional pension. Remember the old three-legged stool? Well, it was going to be Social Security benefits, a traditional pension, and then whatever private savings you managed to have either in your account, bank account, in your home value, and whatever else you've managed to save. Well, traditional pensions, as you know, as the union representation has gotten smaller, traditional pensions are harder and harder to find, and they're certainly not available in a non-unionized work environment. So that's the only thing that's left there. And people are saving less and less, especially younger ones. I don't know whether your daughter has gotten through college yet, but these college kids that are coming through with these massive debts coming out of college that they're going to have to pay back, not only are they not saving for their retirement, they're not able to buy housing. They are falling further behind than my generation was, which is, you never want that for your children and your grandchildren to be worse off financially than you were when you were growing up. You want things to be better for them.
No, and you're
Social Security is the only thing that's left that we haven't undermined. And here you've got these Wall Street guys that are basically trying to do that too.
No, I said this the other day about the three-legged stool. I go, it used to be, for my grandparents' dinner, it was a solid wooden, good solid three-legged stool. They've whittled those three legs down to one, basically a stick that they now want to beat us with because they want to take Social Security away. Because the defined benefit pension is a thing of the past. Like you said, there are a handful of union members who still have them, but good luck finding it. It's almost like a holy grail for people nowadays. And personal savings, because wages have been stagnant for 45-plus years. That's getting harder to do. And Social Security's got some problems at a time when we need it most. So last line of questioning I've got for you, how do we shore this up? What's the marching order? What are we telling people we want to do? How do we get to the place that, you know, as we've been saying, we want some equity. We want women to have retirement security, but we want a system that's going to be solvent and shore up the bottom. How do we get there?
Well, we've been working with a number of members of Congress that are planning to reintroduce comprehensive reform bills. Congressman John Larson of Connecticut, for example, is the chairman of the House Ways and Means Social Security Subcommittee, and he had a comprehensive expansion and reform bill in the previous Congress. He's working on a new one this year that also reflects President Biden's priorities, because the president also had some proposals on Social Security during the campaign trail. So once those bills get introduced, what we're hoping is that the public will actually start pushing their members of Congress to support them. And in Pennsylvania, for example, you have some members of Congress, particularly on the Senate side, that are less likely to be willing to support something like that. And so we would urge people in states, particularly with Republican or conservative Democratic members, to push their members of Congress to try to support these pieces of legislation. And also make a little plug for us, join organizations like ours. What we do is lobby for Social Security and Medicare. We combine the voting power of all of our members and supporters, and we go up to the Hill and we tell members, you have X number of our members and supporters in your state or district, and they all support this bill, and they support Social Security, and they want to see it strengthened and expanded. They don't want to see benefits cut. So that's a large part of what we do. The more members and supporters we can get, the more people that would lobby their members on this issue, the better chance we have of actually moving it forward. And our website has wealth of information, all kinds of details on proposals as they come out and everything else. The website is our initials, National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, ncpssm.org. We'd love to have as many additional members as we can, because there's strength in numbers, and you have to not only have numbers, but you have to be the squeaky wheel. You've got to be the people in there clamoring for this program. And I think part of what's happened is people have gotten a little complacent. They either think it's not going to be there for them, or on the other hand, they think it'll always be there and we don't need to fight for it. And neither one of those situations.
And then there's the other one. I got mine. I don't care about anybody else. Exactly. That's sad. But Maria,
we have to fight for it.
Yep, I'm there with you. I appreciate you taking some time for us. Hope folks will check out the website there at the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. We'll get links out on how you can do that. But Maria Fries, I appreciate you taking time for me.
Anytime. Happy to do it.
Good stuff. Thanks so much. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Are you planning for retirement? Are you talking to your kids about retirement? I'd love to hear it. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.